Hello, today is a fun episode. We talked to Crystal Lowe, who most of us Luthers know as Rita from Science Hill Delivered. But she also is going to be making her directorial debut with Shifting Gears over on the Hallmark Channel as part of Hallmark Channel's initiative of Making Her Mark, which is about promoting female directors. We have a great conversation about that as well. Plus, we have the guys from Muse Entertainment, Joel Rice and Mike Barbuto, who were the producers of this. But they also produced Science Hill Delivered. They produced True Justice, who we talked about earlier this year, as well as the new Aurora Tea Garden, the prequel. So they had all sorts of fun backstories, behind-the-scenes things that you just are going to love. But Crystal also gives us a little hint of something that's to come that I think everybody is going to want to hear. So let's go buckle up. Now we're going to talk. This podcast was created by fans for fans and is not affiliated with or sponsored by Hallmark or the Hallmark Channel. Today is another crazy day. Three guests. I have Crystal Lowe, who is making her debut, or directing debut, not her debut, coming up in Shifting Gears. And then I have the Muse guys who are producing it, Joel and Mike. Hello, all. How are you guys doing today?
Hello, Eric.
Good. How are you guys? Eric.
I will say I had the Justice Warriors, which obviously, Mike and Joel, you are very familiar with, who had them on as this crazy big one, and getting a bunch of people tends to get a little nuts. So I have my list of questions, but I'm also prepared for this to go completely off the rails and just turn into a fun dialogue. So we're gonna have at it, and we're gonna see how it goes. But
I can tell you that they're a bunch of animals. They'll step all over each other. We're a much more civilized bunch, so we should be able to keep it in check for you.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were calling Crystal and I animals. I was surprised.
He did do the subtle head nod that direction.
Right. Yeah.
But we weren't supposed to notice, I guess. All right, Crystal. Well, today is International Women's Day, so it is an absolutely fantastic day to be talking to you about you and the Making Her Mark initiative and your, you know, Hallmark directorial debut. So I just want you to maybe share a little bit about what the whole program, you know, means for you to be the first person in it, just to take part in it, what it means, you know, the whole purpose of it.
It's so weird. I'm like getting so emotional when I think about it right now. And I don't know if it's because, you know, it's funny, I put together this little screening for my family and friends, and I pressed send on the invite to send out to people today. And I just started like kind of tearing up because it's such a good day for this to happen. And the journey has been so long for me, you know, and so much fighting and proving myself and begging and pleading and going out and just making it happen. To see it come to fruition is really mind blowing. And it also makes me feel like I can do anything. If I can get through the grind of figuring out who I was, which is essentially what I've done, learning how to become a filmmaker, I can do anything else. So that's my own personal journey with it. But the program started with Ashley Williams, and her and I met at Rama Drama. And if anyone had ever gone to that, it's like Comic-Con type deal for like people on Hallmark. And her and I were sitting in the limo, like an actual old school limo, which nobody goes in anymore, and talking and just like, you know, getting to know each other. And she had asked randomly if I knew any contractors, and I was like, I do. And I sent my husband to check out her place. Anyways, through that, we started talking, and she started telling me about this program and how Hallmark was going to create a space for female directors. And I had heard about this, you know, through the grapevine. I'd heard buzz that this was happening, but I'd been waiting and waiting and wasn't sure when. And then I started asking Ashley, how do I apply? You know, like, what do I do? What do I do? And her and I went on a hike, which I didn't realize was actually an interview, which I'm so glad I didn't know, to be honest, because I strapped my baby to my back. My baby was my 40-pound baby to my back at that time. And we went for a really long hike, and she just asked me about my directing journey. Meanwhile, she was interviewing me to see whether or not I would be a good candidate. So I ended up being chosen kind of as like the guinea pig, you know, in the pilot program. I had been with the network for a long time, and I think I'll tell you, a lot of people have come up to me and been like, well, it's only because you were with the network. And I was like, well, my counter to that is I've been with the network for a really long time, begging and pleading. You know, this was not handed to me. This was not just given to me because I'm on Sign Seal. This was something that I was expected to earn and you know, fight for. And I did on my own. So the program is set up in a way that you get to shadow somebody from prep to post fully and, you know, sit behind them and monitor and learn everything. And then you essentially are given your own film, and that person you shadowed becomes your creative producer and sits with you. So that's kind of like the overall of what we did.
All right. Well, I saw your little Instagram post that you had yesterday about your hike and getting lost. So I guess it was a good thing that that wasn't the hike where you go
lost,
with Ashley and just lost.
I slid down on my butt down an right. entire, like, I'm never listening to other people tell me where to go again, but it was an interesting, I'm going hiking after this too, because I'm a crazy person, you know, always up for a challenge.
All right. Now, you know, from you standpoint, when this movie came around, with the Shifting Gears, was this like supposed to be part of the initiative, or did it just coincidentally align with being the Make Her Mark date, you know, guinea pig program?
Yeah. So it wasn't planned this way. And I'm not exactly sure what led to this show being chosen. There's many possibilities, like the fact that I've been rooting for Crystal to direct for 10 years myself and suggested her also for it. And they, you know, they obviously know we have a good close relationship from Sign Seal Delivered. But also, you know, Muse has a very close relationship with Hallmark, and they know this is an issue that matters to us. You had said they make space, they decided to make space for women, but they had already started, they were already doing that with more experienced female directors, and we hire a lot of female directors in general, but they were trying to make it more accessible to more women, and that's sort of the spirit of it. So I was thrilled. They asked if I minded that this one would be, and I'm like, mind, you know, it would be our honor. And we really took it seriously. And even in the crewing up and the key positions, they didn't ask for any of this, but it was like, look, it's also maybe the movie itself is a very pro-female movie. It's a woman in a traditional man's world, and it's a woman empowerment story, you know? And so I think that might've been a factor as well, or it might've just been the perfect timing. We were so proud of the fact that our designer is female, our camera operator, we have a whole female AD team. We have our PM and one of the line producers is female, you know, just across the board. We're like that anyway, you know, in terms of diversity and gender and all, you know, always wanting to make sure that we give opportunities to everyone and to make sure that people that have had to fight for opportunities don't have to fight to get it from us. So that's sort of the spirit of us as a company anyway. So it's really great.
It is interesting because I had Stacey Harding, who's directed several Hallmark movies on just recently, and she was telling about her journey as well and about how it, you know, she had to fight as well. But it's kind of, I think what you just said, for her, she didn't have to fight once she got to Hallmark, because she was a little, you know, she'd created a little bit of established directing, you know, portfolio there. But it does seem, I guess, then the coming for the first time was a little more challenging.
In general, though, like, it's one to every six men. And this has nothing to do with Muse. I'm talking about like female directors whole. We are still, you know, way down the list. But the thing about what I've experienced so far, especially with Muse, is the allies that I have in the men in the industry have been phenomenal. I mean, like, because we need them. We need them to step up and say, no, we see there's an issue. I know in general we own the pie, but we don't need all the pie. In fact, I think you could make us more pie if we bring you in. And so, like, that's what I've experienced. So the fight is still for real for women. It's one in every six. That's the latest stat that I read. And I was like, what? And that's as a whole in the industry, not obviously for Hallmark.
Well, thanks to you, maybe it's one in every 5.9.
And I think as a female director, for me, a huge part of my initiative going forward is to uplift any other female director and any other director, period. That's just who I am. But, you know, I have tons of women reaching out to me now asking me, how did you do it? I was like, you hit the pavement and you just make it happen, you know. But we need to, without the male allies that I had, inviting me to the table, and actually not just inviting, but like fighting for me to get to the table, it would have been a much harder drive. So I'm super grateful.
So I don't want to be in any way bashing Hallmark, because I think Hallmark is a great network and doing great, great things. But what's interesting is Peter Benson was just on Hallmark Cafe, and he was talking about how he got into directing. And he was on Aurora Tea Garden, you know, for kind of similar to Science Seal Delivered.
Yeah.
And he sort of said, hey, I'm interested in this. And so they, oh, well, why don't you start shadowing? It seemed like they were very proactively pushing to get him,
you know,
into the directing. And then they said, okay, then you can direct one.
Right. I would ask Peter again, though. Like, I think if he was here, I've known Peter personally for like, God, I don't even know, 20 years. Peter has already been making stuff for years and years and years. So like yes, he was an actor. Yes, he was, but he was already writing his own. He'd already produced and directed his own features. Like, he was already on his way in his journey. I don't think it was as simple as him just being like, you know, I want to do it. And then, because that doesn't help anybody.
Sorry, Crystal.
No, it's okay.
I was actually, I was just going to say, I agree with you. I was on set for Peter's first Hallmark movie. It was the Aurora Tea Garden Heist and Seek.
Right.
And he said the same thing. He shared the same thing. He'd been doing it for a while at that point. This is just his first opportunity to working with Hallmark. Yeah.
I owned a restaurant, and Peter actually shot one of his movies in my restaurant. So like, I know that's what I'm saying. That was a feature length film that he wrote, produced, and directed himself. So he already was starting to just want to see that they're not betting on a whole, you know, they're putting a lot of money my hands. I think it's more that females are not really encouraged to fight for it. A lot of the times, you know, this is a much bigger conversation, but you know, once you have children, that changes the dynamic of where women are in the home.
It's funny you say that, bring up the children one, because I had my first born was a girl. And that like immediately turned me into the biggest feminist, I think, on the planet. And I, you know, ever seeing your child and just wanting it to be great for her, that's kind of, for me, it's just like, you can do anything. And
same second generation. Same for me, because I have two daughters, and actually Crystal is very close to one of my daughters. She babysat for her kids and stuff. But I wanted to ask you, Erica, I don't know if you've had Ashley Williams on in relation to this, and I don't know if you know the origin of the program, but it's really her. She fought to have this program happen. And as the regime evolved and changed, as soon as Lisa was there, it's like, yes, why aren't we doing that? And so but she was trying for many, many years. And they also really had that moment where they shifted gears. Shall I try a pun?
Well done.
And really made it a priority. Hallmark made it a priority for many of the executives to hire women. And then the two mentors that Crystal had are directors that Muse works with all the time. They're our favorites, Linda Lisa Hayter, who was 20 years a script supervisor before she got the opportunity to direct, Jessica Harmon, who was an actress. And, you know, like, and there was a moment that Hallmark really opened the door and gave people that are now are their go-tos the opportunity to do one, and that really changed the average and the go-to, you know. And so it's kind of great. And then the other key people on the project that we're going to talk about shifting gears today as well, that was the project for the this program, the executives, Aisha Francis, and then the head of the rom-com division, Jessica Callahan. You know, I mean, like, every single person except for Mike and I were women making this thing happen. And Tyler, you know, it really was, and we were so proud to be a part of it.
That is awesome.
I do want to add, too, because Joel touched upon something a few minutes ago when he said, you know, this is something that dovetails with us as a company, as Muse Entertainment. Our mission statement is this. You know, I mean, we've always been drawn to character-driven stories that champion the unique POVs, right? The protagonists that rarely get to tell their own stories, or lead characters that are usually the supporting characters. And really, you know, as much as I'm not a fan of, I hate to admit this, but a lot of times women are still in those supporting roles. And that's not just in front of the camera, that's behind the camera. So it is something that we have been actively aware of and actively trying to pursue initiatives like this on our side for years, because we work with very established women, incredibly intelligent, very talented women that have identified that there are other women in front of the camera and behind the camera that will meet the moment and rise to the challenge if given the opportunity, you know? So it does feel very kismet that, you know, we were asked to do this. And I feel like it, I mean, Crystal, you'd be able to, I don't know, answer better than I, but I feel like it was a good working relationship between
it
us
was,
and
the best thing I could have asked for. And, you know, it was also just so weird because it was, things were changing and moving a lot, which is just making films in general, you know. But for example, filming in Ottawa, I thought I was going to film in Vancouver, British Columbia. I literally know everybody in Vancouver. I've grown up there. I have a 20, 30 year relationship with all the crews and all the cast. I know everybody and their dog. And then we found out we were filming in Ottawa and I was like, what? Ottawa. There's a team up there. Like not one person. And so, and I'd never worked with, I call Mike Barbie, but I never worked with Mike. And so that was a new relationship. And I was like, oh my God, okay. All right. I'm going to get thrown in the fire. And honestly, that crew was, I just want to take them with me now. You know, now I'm like, well, I guess I'm moving to the East Coast. I love you guys. I had that, you know, it was, everything came together the way it was supposed to for me perfectly, including having two mentors, which won't happen for other people in the program. I only had it because our first mentor unfortunately had to leave due to a pregnancy, which was great news because that's a person that's being born. So I got the opportunity to have two mentors on set. Like it all just worked out exactly how it was supposed to for me.
Just for the record, due to her pregnancy didn't mean like she could, we didn't want her to be the
No. She wanted to go. No. She was very, and she's talked about this on social media now. She was violently ill and still sucking it up and trying to, and coming to all the meetings. And I mean, this, not to dog on you boys, but everybody has children here. So you understand, you know, being pregnant is not always pretty. In fact, it's like excruciating a lot of the times. And I worked all the way through my pregnancy. In fact, I was on Signed Sealed when I was 9 months pregnant, shooting one of our movies. You know, it the fact that she stayed as long as she did and did as much as she did, you know, before I was like, man, you gotta go and take care of that human growing in you, was amazing.
And then
I got Linda.
And then the final piece to Jessica Harmon's story of being so sick she had to leave is she's currently directing for Muse, two movies back to back while seven and 8 months pregnant. And she even said to me, like, I'm pregnant. I don't know if that, this was before she was sick. And I don't know if that's going to be a problem for, a problem as long as you don't have the baby during, in the middle of the day. But even then we have a backup plan. We want you to work as much as you can. And that show, just as an aside, the lead actress just had a baby. The DP's wife had a baby during prep. And then she's seven and eight months pregnant during the shoot. So it's a baby celebration.
Well, and Eric, I will tell you, I've been pregnant twice on Signed Sealed. I've been pregnant in the last movie, I was 5 months pregnant. And the one of the other movies, I was like, there's been more because I was pregnant for a long period of time. I was so scared to tell everybody I was pregnant. And I mean, like, terrified. I didn't want to tell my agent. I certainly didn't want to tell Joel. I did not want to tell Martha. I didn't want to tell anybody, because normally what happens with female actresses in our industry is once you're pregnant, they're going to write you out. Like, it's just going to happen there, you know. And I had done so much sci-fi before that definitely I wasn't fitting into whatever skin tight suit they wanted me in. So it was so scary when I came to them and talked about it. And I was met with, I mean, I must have horseshoes up my butt, you know, like I was met with so much open arms. Joel let me shoot whenever I needed. He gave me the time off that I needed. It was, I was padded with love during that time. And so I know that Jess is fine over there doing that too.
It was great. 9 months pregnant on one of them.
Yep. And, the Valentine's.
Yes. And so we did the Lucille Ball pregnancy where she would stand behind stuff and that kind of thing. And we consolidated her time. And the strategy was, if you have the baby early, then you'll be at the end of the schedule. And if you don't have the baby, then you're at the beginning of the schedule. So that, and we had a plan A and plan B for her. So that was kind of fun.
The minute they yelled rap on that day, like that I was rapped, Alan Lewis, who is a, you know, a grown man who does a ton of movies and can handle any fire, was like, please get off the set. Like laughing with me because I was like terrified that I was going to give birth any minute. I mean, I was so pregnant on that show. And it's the only time Rita's ever sat in Eric's chair. Like I sat in Oliver's chair, which is super weird. I normally would never have done that. It's just that I was so pregnant that they're like, well, we'll put you behind his desk so that it covers your belly. I was like, okay. Yeah, it was fun.
Well, that I would say that's kind of a hallmarky thing too, because Jill Wagner, I think she was pregnant in three of the Mystery 101s. And I've heard some of her interviews where it's a similar thing where it's like, oh no, I'm pregnant. What's going to happen? And same thing. They embraced it. And I guess the big, speaking of embrace, from my understanding, like one of the biggest issues was it was like she was 5 months, 6 months pregnant when she first had the first kiss. And it was like, how to get with the belly. And they were trying to, like, that was the big issue is just how do you get that kiss? Not, you know, the pregnant, they accept it. So that's fantastic. All right. So just quick, like, does Muse have any similar initiatives that you do to help promote women or other diversity as far as growing in the entertainment? Because it is, you know, we're three white guys here, whatever that's the history of it. Right. But it is changing and everything like that. Is there anything you guys have, you know, officially?
It's our brand. It's bigger than our initiative. It's our brand. So we had a series on Apple called Best Foot Forward, which featured the first young adult leading role of a kid with a prosthetic leg played by a kid with a prosthetic leg. We did the first gay Christmas movie for Netflix called Single All the Way. We prioritize diversity. We're going out with a show right now starring Alex Newell. I don't know if you know who he is. He was the first non-binary actor to win a Tony, and he's from Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. We sought him out. You know, so we're small enough that we don't really have initiatives, but we have priorities, and we have, you know, our mission statement. So that's more how.
Yeah, and that's the best way that we can, you know, help change effectively, right, is through the product that we put out there for the world to see. And that's what I was saying is, you know, we are always drawn to the stories that champion the unique POVs of the lead character that historically has never been able to be the lead character. You know, we did Hallmark's first Korean Christmas movie. We did Hallmark's first Kwanzaa holiday movie. You know, those are things that not only, I don't know, give a voice to a culture or, you know, a story that never would have been told, but it also educates people. And it's fun and it's exciting, you know what I mean? Just to see something different like that. I think that's just who we've always been, you know? And that's what I meant before when I said, you know, I wanted to touch upon what Joel had said, because it did feel very kismet that, you know, we were given the gift to develop Shifting Gears and then to find out that it was going to be paired with this program and then to find out that through the program it was going to be Crystal directing. I mean, all the stars just kind of aligned. And
so you guys didn't bring Shifting Gears to Hallmark brought to you?
No, we brought it to them.
We brought it to them. Yeah,
gotcha. Okay.
He just meant that it was going to happen, like they get to decide whether to make it or not. Right?
Wait, why do they get to
decide? Which is always a gift, to be honest with you, when you get something put into development. That's always a...
Yes. Crystal, now, when you were, you know, said, oh, hey, you are the, you know, the guinea pig, as you said, did you get to choose which project you got? Or did they say pretty much say, Shifting Gears is it? How about it?
That was up to them to decide. I think it was really, you know, me shadowing Jess first and then Jess saying, look, I think she's ready, through the shadow and talking to me and working with me and seeing if I could do it. And then I think it really just depended on finding the right time, finding the right cast, you know, it's such a, I love to describe filmmaking as like a giant clock, you know, and I talk about this with my crews. When you take the face of a clock off, it's like a ton of tiny little pieces all moving at the same time. it's actually a miracle that a clock works, you know? So that's what making a film, developing a film, that's literally what it is making sure that all the timing lines up. And I think it just, it all came together. I also am very woo-woo, so I really believe in the universe. And I think that it brings us all together at the right place at the right time. It might not always be on my time, but it comes together perfectly. So the project was the right fit for me.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. So when you first saw it, you weren't like, oh, and of course you're not going to say terrible things because the movie's about to come out, but just between us, we won't tell anybody.
Nobody's
right?
listening
but
to this.
When you, when you first saw it, were you like, yeah, oh crap, this is the one that I have for my one? Or were you like, oh, this is the perfect one for my first, you know, opportunity?
Well, two things I'll tell you about me. I'm like oops positive, right? Like that's just the type of person I am. I am a silver lining, you know, chaser. So like there's never a time where you give me something where I won't look for all the positives and the silver lining behind it. But I grew up around cars, which is super weird. So as soon as I opened it, I was like, oh, like this is so silly to talk about, but once upon a time I was like Miss Molson Indy Canada, right? So I traveled with all the Indy race car drivers all over. And you know, so I've been around cars forever. So that was a weird, you know, fit for me. And there is nothing better than for me, a female that I can showcase in a, you know, man's world, man's position through my gaze. Like I was like, oh yes, now I can show you what we look like from my point of view. Now I can specifically do an amazing shot of like her standing and her power, you know, in her mechanics and just owning the room. It's a more male dominated industry, but like that's only because we weren't really invited to that that garage, not because we couldn't do it. And so that was really important for me to show her the way that I see women in any position, which is a much more powerful stance.
So you had mentioned earlier, I think, Joel, just how it was such an important, initiative was so important for Hallmark. Were there any, like, did they give you more resources or more support for this movie than they normally do because they just wanted it to be a success? Is that like why Tyler is in this one? Just because, you know, you can get all the Heinzies and it's just, we want this movie to be successful. So they,
I just want to tell you, it's Heinzies. We have to say it right. Cause they're the Heinies, not Heinzies. They're Heinies. Very important to me. Okay.
Oh, they, yes, I know they are.
I'm a champion for them.
Joel. Yeah. So, they definitely put their money into the program and making sure the mentors are properly paid and all of that kind of thing. We didn't get more money for it. Tyler was the perfect person for it, whether it was the program or not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they do want it to succeed for sure. I think they wanted to definitely go with a company that they trust so that it can succeed. We were along the ride for the guinea pig with Ashley, you know, figuring out, well, at what point do you let Crystal decide? And then I have to call Mike out because he was so excited about it. He wanted to give Crystal the perfect experience. And I said, no, you can't give her, you can't say yes to her when we usually say no to the person. You can't like spend because Crystal wants it because it's this program. That's not really, that's not the best training you could give someone, is to have it seem like sure, it's going to be a certain way going forward, because then she'll go into the next one. I did say to her, because obviously it was a great experience, so we did do it to a certain extent, but it's really the way we are. I mean, she was like, normally for Hallmark, the director gets the job and they start prep the next week. She had a month or two beforehand. Yes. I said, that's not the way it's going to be here. Like, I know you want us to do all this 6 weeks before we're starting prepping, but like, and that's great, it's a gift to us too, but we don't usually get, I spent a lot of time saying, this isn't how it's always going to be, Crystal, because she was, but we didn't, but we also said no to her and said, you know, you need to come up with another way to solve that doesn't cost triple, you know, like we did all of the things that we do. She should have that experience like anyone else.
In my defense, I will say that she is very scary though, and very intimidating and difficult to say no to. She can be a bit of a, yeah.
Especially dressed as Rita, because that's when I really pull out the makeup. Just dressed as Rita, and I'm like, how are you going to say no? I'm the cutest. But he, you know, that producer, especially the hands-on producer, like on the ground producer with me, working experience. Yes, they were tough on me. Of course, they told me no when I wanted things because I'm always going to ask for everything if I can. But I do feel like I was very spoiled with my experience with Mike because he's a really, really, really good producer. He just knows what he's doing and he's can get things to work the same. So I think, Joel, honestly, I'm spoiled no matter what now. Because like, unless I'm working with him again, my expectations are high, from whoever the next producer comes in.
But we were also spoiled at having it be Crystal. Because, I mean, sometimes not knowing how it's done is so interesting to someone like myself who's done so many. Of course, she knows because she's been on set her whole life. But not knowing what the director does, like, I don't know what other producers do. I came into producing as a social worker. And then my very first movie, Hal Holbrook said to me, like, you're not like other producers. And I, of course, thought that was a bad thing. And so I said, well, what is it? What is it that I'm not like? And I won't say what he said about other producers, but we travel in our own lane in that way, especially if producers, because we're not on other sets. But Crystal did things like bringing in people on the crew on the ground floor to the philosophy and the design of the show, so that of course she did that with the designer, but she did it with the grip, with that, every department was invested in and aware of, like, the holistic strategy visually. And they would say things to her like, no one's ever asked me that before. And that's terrible that's true, but it's also great that reminds me to not just do it the way that we've been doing, but to always consider that there's always room to do more, be better, grow, be more inclusive, all of those kind of things.
Yeah, it's true. Every now and then you get to work with the director that makes you a better producer. And this was one of those cases. I want to just touch upon the story that Crystal told with the clocks, which I think is such an amazing analogy about how it takes all the pieces to make it run. And even though you can't see them on the surface, underneath there's all these moving parts. And that's, by and large, your whole family, your crew that's making the movie. When Crystal gave that speech on day one, she set the tone with the crew right away. And she said, look, let's just call the elephant out in the room. This is my first Hallmark movie. But it doesn't mean I don't know how to direct. It doesn't mean I don't know how to lead a team. It doesn't mean I don't know how to tell a story. And right away, she had them all on board and they were behind her every step of the way from then on because she set the tone. And I think that that's something that it bears mentioning, because when it comes to the soft skills a director has, most directors that are getting hired, they know how to point a camera. They know how to talk to a DP or a cinematographer, and they know how to get something lit because they want to create a mood or a theme or whatever. What a lot of them don't know how to do is talk to people, because when you look at a camera operator, they've probably done something else. If you look at a grip or an electric on your floor crew, or your first AD, your script supervisor, they've usually migrated from other departments and they get to work with other directors. A director is the only job on a film set that doesn't work with other directors. If they came up just as a director, like old white guys, most of them, that's what they did, is they just got thrown into it as a director. They've never worked with other directors. So they're actually really crappy at talking to people, and Crystal, not only because of being a phenomenal actor, she's an incredible acting teacher. And when I watched her give notes, and she used to get mad at me actually, because I would be like, oh, what? She's like, yeah, I'm on it, Mike, like, relax, I got it. And then she would go on set, she would pull these performances out of these actors, these local day players that aren't as strong. And I was blown away at what she was able to get. But it wasn't just their performance. They felt safe. They felt comfortable, which, gives you the better performance. But everybody was like that. That set became a family. And that's what I say. Like, if I were to take anything away, it's those intangibles that I hope that I can then do on my next one. Every now and then you work with a director that makes you a better producer. And this was one of them.
So when I finally get my role as the dead guy or the barista, I should get Crystal to be my director, huh?
I've
my best performance out of me.
Eric, I've died in like 50 movies, okay? Teaching you how to be a dead body, I'm like a pro. I will get the best performance ever from you, Liner.
I practice all the time and my wife laughs because I cannot do it without smiling. She's like, dead people don't smile. So
it's happening. My dream.
Crystal, when Mike was on earlier and we talked, we had that conversation, and I likened it to when I used to play sports, and when I went from being a player to being a coach, how you're you know, you're always just focused on yourself. So as an actor, this is what Mike was saying, from going from being an actor to being a producer, you know, you're focused on you and your performance. But then when you flip and you become, for you, a director, you now have to focus on everybody and everything that's going on. What was like, now you did get to shadow and get a little experience in it, but when it was you, what was like the thing that you just found like, wow, crazy, when you had to be responsible for everything?
Okay. This sounds really, I don't know if this is like fluffing my own ego, but I love being responsible for everything. So,
so you have some control issues, is what you're saying.
Code for bossy.
I prefer that position. This is such a silly story, but when I was in kindergarten, I started my own company. I hired the other kindergarten kids to clean the entire area of my special space that I decided that I bought, and I paid them with hockey cards, and got in trouble for it because they were like, you can't do that. And I was like, why? I'm paying them and this is my team. Like, I've always wanted to be the person who had a team. So that part wasn't so much. It was just more like the parts where I was like, oh, this is a six-hander. Oh God, I have so many people to cover in this. You know, like really the technical stuff of it, the being in charge and having everyone kept saying to me, you know, everyone's gonna ask you a million questions. You're gonna get questions from everywhere and it's gonna drive you crazy. And I was like, I love getting it. That part doesn't stress me out. In fact, I would prefer they ask me questions so I can tell them what to do. So that they like, so we're all on the same page and you're doing it the way that I need you to do it. What was more stressful for me was just like, we have to block shoot this, you know? And those are things that I need to just be thrown into the fire and practice. And I just hadn't been thrown into the fire to have six people in the shot and get everybody's eye lines. And while I smartly decided to block shoot this whole entire day, you know, I also have a tendency to throw myself into like, I will jump off any cliff because I know I can swim. I learn better that way. It's so that sometimes was a little overwhelming. And there was, I'm not going to lie to you guys, there was definitely days where I was like, I'm going to go take a candy break outside where nobody could see me, you know, and I'm just going to breathe. I love listening to Whitney Houston and music on set. So when I'm stressed, I would take my phone and play How Will I Know and dance by myself outside.
It's a true story.
That's true. And then, you know, I had this amazing DP and he was so funny because he's like, you know, kind of a not grumpy. I wouldn't say that at all. He's more like reserved, you know, quiet. And he was like, are we going to keep listening to Whitney? And I, you know, I laughed and I was like, I don't know what else you got. Right. And so the next couple of days he would come in with like song suggestions. And I was like, this is the best. Like,
it wasn't though. It was like Iron Maiden and old school heavy metal. It was awful.
It was more that he was bringing like song suggestions to me. You know, oh, this is how you cope with stress. It's snacks and music. I'm like, yeah, we need to dance it out. I need to do that part. And then you need to explain to me how I'm going to get all these eye lines in the next 30 minutes of, and you know, so that was what was more stressful for me, more of like the technical stuff that I had done.
Well, I don't know if you're being a very good Canadian, if you're doing the Whitney Houston versus the Celine Dion, when you're going for the big diva voice, but right. I don't know, you may lose your citizenship.
We canter labored it with a little Brian Adams, so we were good. We covered all our bases.
That is true. And I will bring Celine. Don't think she's gone. I have a million movies to do. So yeah, but by the end of it, all the crew is dancing and you know, I just try to make it a enjoyable place because you're with each other for like 15, you know, 12 to 15 hours a day. I think of making a film like Summer Camp because it feels like that, right? You go in there, you fall in love, you hate each other, you become best friends, you play a sport, you know, you do this thing because it's so intense for that short period of time. And then you all cry when you leave and go, all right. I mean, and you never do, but you think about those people because making a film is like this special, crazy moment where you're in the trenches together and it's the best.
All right. Well, we said that you have Tyler Hines in this one. Mm. For having this be your directorial debut, having one of, I would say he's probably like on the Mount Rushmore of the Hallmark, you know, men right now.
Yeah.
What was it like having someone of that magnitude that you had to boss around? Because from what I've heard too, Tyler is a strong-willed person. So having like that like you say, your debut.
Yeah. I mean, anybody who's been in this industry as long as Tyler and I have, which is like 30 years, is going to be strong-willed because you cannot survive in this industry if you don't understand who you are and you constantly are pushing yourself to grow, which is what he does, you know? So he's trying to push himself to make the best product he can ever push. I don't think that's a bad thing. I also think that having years and years of experience as an actor just gives me a shorthand. I can have a conversation with another actor and we know what each other's doing within 5 seconds. It's not like, you know, that's the home court advantage that I'm going to come in with. And so I don't, even if I was working with Tom Cruise, I don't think I would just want to get down to the nuts and bolts of it, which is, hey, I know this job and so do you. So can we just talk? And that it was easy. Like there was no, I didn't look at it that way. I just looked at it as like, here we are. Let's make something beautiful. Let's treat this like it's our own little indie, you know, and just try and find some nuance to all our performances. It was like that with him and Kat. So it just felt like I was meeting my peers, which was wonderful.
Well, Kat's a little bit different though, because she just recently directed her Hallmark movie. So was it like helpful having, once again, another female who just directed a Hallmark movie on set?
For sure. Kat is super, super, super willing to play. And that for me is like, I just want to play, you know, and I'm talking in acting terms, but like, I want to throw things and see what hits. And Kat was really, really willing to do that. So that was her superpower, I think. Plus she knew what was going on and she understood it. But again, like these people are my peeps. Right. This would be like you meeting up with a bunch of other podcasters. I don't care how big the podcaster are. You're like, bro, I got you. You got me. Let's just sit down and get this stuff going. So it was a very warm, easy environment with actors like that. That's the least of my concern. It was more like, where are the grips? Can I talk to them and make sure I know what everybody's doing? That was more of the, oh, God, I'm working with this DP. That was more of what it was for me.
All right. So in this movie, are there Easter eggs? Are there things like as a fan that we may not notice that's going on that sort of made it like maybe, you know, someone's in the wrong clothes in one scene or something like that? Do we have anything to look for?
Easter eggs. I was just going to say, as a producer, those aren't Easter eggs. Those are mistakes. Is that what you mean?
No, there's, I gave both. There can be an intentional or some unintentional.
Right, well, we're not going to tell you the unintentional for sure. But go ahead.
Well, you're just no fun at all.
I would definitely look for Kristen Booth,
which
and that is my giant Easter egg, the biggest Easter egg filled with the best bubbly prizes in the world. Like that was that having her as a postable, you know, and directing my postable, and I've been working with her instrument for so long. That she is like, please tune in to watch her too. Cause that was my favorite part of this whole casting process. Cause originally her role was two different people. And everybody had the foresight enough to combine that role so that we could get Kristen in it. And it was worth its weight of gold.
So who makes a decision like that?
I'll let the gentleman.
Well, I think that, I sort of do, but then I run it by the network. But really, it was just obvious. I mean, the two roles were neither quite right for her, so we combined it, and then she was the right age for it, you know? And then you mentioned to Hallmark, and they're like, oh my God, yes. And Kristen actually called me up and said, I want to support Krista. I'd like to be in it. She thought I would throw her like a cameo. And so, but why? Why not have her truly be in it? So then she was there to support Krista the whole time, you know?
Wait, so she's not just a cameo?
10 days of a 15. No,
I thought she was just a cameo. 10 days of a
15-day shoot. No, she's a strong supporting.
Okay.
Second female lead, yeah.
Eric, I will tell you Easter egg-wise, I'm just going to tell you, my color palette, because I'm obsessed with color and telling story with color, is blue and red and white. I chose the real Americana colors, which is also the Pretty Woman color palette. That's why I chose it.
Okay.
Figure out which character is wearing blue, which character is wearing red, and what happens as those colors combine. I really used color with story, and everyone on my team did as well. Like they were going and finding pieces of colors of how people were feeling and making sure the scene felt that way. And when they feel a certain way, there's a different color palette. So that's a really fun Easter egg that you guys can watch.
Should I be reading into the fact you're wearing blue now then?
You're just going to have to go, but I did it on purpose. It's definitely one of the color palettes. Nothing is not on purpose with me, just so you know.
All right. That's exciting. All right. Now, see, I have something to look for there.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So the big thing is, wide open question for all three of you. Why should someone, other than the obviously the wonderful directorial debut and the initiative here, but just from the movie standpoint, why should anyone want to watch this movie?
Oh, well, first of all, it's a female. It's in a job that we never get to see on screen. That's number one. But number two, the world is often a dumpster fire. Watching Shifting Gears will give you a little bit of hope and a little bit of joy and give you a moment to breathe. That's what this movie is going to do for you. It's going to inspire your daughters if you sit and watch it with them and your sons. And it's going to give you a second to just fall in love again. You know, I feel like we all, maybe I shouldn't say this, but we all have that one person that we wonder, what if things had worked out that way? What if things, you know, went a different direction? What if, and we're always kind of questioning that. And especially if you part with that person, right? Especially if you're gone for a couple of years and you both get your own lives going, you go, yeah, no, no, there's a reason we didn't work out. It probably is for the best. And you justify that in your mind, but somewhere in the back of there, you know that there's that person and that they're the other half of, you know, your piece. So this is a movie for you if you've ever experienced that and you want to fall in love again. That's what I would say. Gentlemen, what about you?
Yes. Muse?
You, Eric, you had asked me that same question when we talked about True Justice the last time we got together. And at the risk of recycling my answer, I'm going to. This one does have something for everyone. This is your classic love story. This is two people that lock horns, that have a contentious past, that realize they are still in love with one another and end up together in the end. Now, I don't care. There's a reason that that construct works. Nobody tunes into Romeo and Juliet to see if they end up with other people. You know what I mean? The love story in this one is so strong. But when I say it's got something for everybody, it's also got a 67 Stingray rebuild. It's got a 68 Buick Skylark. There are some badass cars in this thing that we spent a whack of money and we spent so much time prepping. You want to talk about pre-prep and the logistics that goes into buying 9, 10, 11 different cars in different stages of restoration so we could really do the story justice. Because at its core, this is about the backdrop of this movie is classic cars. It's Americana. And rather than rent it for an hour and shoot a little piece of it, Crystal's vision was no. I want to see everything. I want to see these things when they're beater junker cars. I want to see them when they're, you know, halfway from being fixed. And then I want to see them when they're fully done and shiny and blah, blah, blah. Because so much of the journey of the cars is emblematic to the characters. Like, it's representative of what they go through, right? And that, I mean, any dude, I would tune into this one. If I had never seen a Hallmark movie in my life, if I was, you know, someone who had just landed on Earth from Mars and said, what's Hallmark? I would say make sure that this is the first one that you see, because it's a beautiful movie, but it's got a lot of elements that I think your traditional Hallmark, your non-traditional Hallmark viewer would want to tune in and see something like this, I think.
And Eric, there's another Easter egg in there too, what he was talking about. Like, there's a Thunderbird, and that was my homage to Thelma.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And so I specifically asked the entire Ottawa team. I was like, could you get me a 1976 Thunderbird? And they were like, yeah. I'm like, what? Can you? And they did. And that was me. Thelma and Louise is one of my favorites. And so that car, and they actually I have photos of it. I can show them now on social media, but in prep, they named, like, we had multiple cars so we could paint them. Thelma, Louise, and the Cliff. Like, each car had their license plate was Thelma, Louise, and the Cliff, which I thought was hilarious. So
I didn't get it. I was like, why is that one named Cliff? And like, so I was like, well, think about the ending cliff of the movie. So, okay. But no, the art team and our transport, our everybody that worked on that, they were just amazing. They literally drove from Ottawa. They would find somebody who was selling, you know, a Thunderbird in Detroit, and they would get in the car and just drive all the way to Detroit to get it and bring it back. So we had the cars, you know, that Crystal had in her vision for the movie. It was amazing to see how they all worked in lockstep with one another.
It's the same with our set designer. She was one of the top people I could have, like for real though. Like, she's working with, you know, massive, massive directors. The other thing about our crew that I really want to harp on is that zero ego. Some of those people, you know, were coming to me and saying, we're of service to you. What do you need? Like, you're the star. And I was like, what? You know, like, these people have done way more than I have. And all ego, and I don't know if that's a Canadian thing, but like, ego was out the door. They could care less about that. They just wanted to make my vision come true.
Two things.
Well, the flips.
Sorry, that yesterday I just talked to Nikki DeLoach, as I told you, and she did a very big, long take on the lack of ego in creating the Hallmark movies. And she was talking about True Justice and how it was able to create between her and Meg in writing, and then just the production and everything like that. But the other thing I want to say, you're talking about the Thunderbird, is my mom, I had a 56 Thunderbird or whatever it was, some, you know, classic Thunderbird convertible that when she married my dad, he made her sell so they could get money so he could start his first business. And to the day she died, she never forgave him for making her sell that car. So I have a little connection to the Thunderbird there.
Get her to watch it. I mean, that's why.
Well, of course, I'm watching it. I mean, I'm an easy sell here.
I was very specific. I will tell you that I was very, very, very specific. Every single choice that you see, every single thing on there was intentional.
I've gathered that about you now.
Yeah, I don't do anything just to do it. It's too lazy and it's too easy to just do it for that. Why? If I'm given the opportunity and a budget, I'm going to do everything I can with that time.
So I was just going to jump in to answer your question as well. I don't care about cars at all. I'm a dude, and I know nothing about cars. So just to make sure that people know that this is one of my favorite movies, and it's not because of the cars, but I'll tell you an interesting story about how it came to be. I pitched it to the writer is Matt Marks, by the way, and he brought it to me, and I pitched it several years ago under a different regime, and it was passed on, and Aisha Francis was my executive on it, and she could not sell it, and she was like so wanting to do it, and she actually, and I'm a very aggressive, or I'll say assertive, ambitious, you know,
determined,
but she came to me and said, like, remember that one you pitched me like 3 years ago? We should pitch that again, because things have changed here. They want to see women in these roles, you know. They don't mind a woman getting her hands dirty, that kind of thing. And so so we brought it back. And so the reason why I think everyone should watch is really that it is a really, it is aspirational story for women in terms of being, you know, Kat is an amazing actor, but also she just, you know, she's just going to take no prisoners and get what she needs to help her family and to stand up for herself. And then of course, Tyler with any woman, but they have tremendous chemistry in this because she's tough. I mean, I think that's the best counterpoint to Tyler, someone who can take him on, you know. And so, you know, it's just that that chemistry that is, you know, that alone would be the reason to watch.
I don't want to downplay it all, but Tyler could have chemistry with Mike's coffee cup. All right, I mean,
that's, right. I'm talking
true.
About the dude.
True.
That's the dude.
She's
gig,
very
right?
particular.
The degree. I'm talking about the degree of.
Right.
He's always going to have chemistry, and this is through the roof, which often it is with him. But this is just something magical about who Kat is in across from him that really is a slightly different kind of chemistry than a lot of the times with him, which is great.
Well, by the way, Mike, I could have saved you a lot of money. I could have just let you borrow my Prius, you know. You didn't need to get all those other cars. You could just have my.
That wasn't on my list, Eric. Okay, where, that was not.
Eric,
my
it is why am I only?
It is blue.
Why am I only meeting you now, man? Between the dead body, the Prius, we could have saved all kinds of money
yes.
in production.
I am the frugal producer here for you. All right, all right. I'm sold. I'll be watching it, but I knew that was going to be the case anyhow. So, all right. We can't have you on here and not talk Science Seal Delivery because we are a mystery podcast at the end of the day.
What's that show? I can't. Right. Science Seal Delivery.
I think it was canceled about 15 years ago.
40 different.
But let me just tell me a little bit about that. Like your role as Rita when you first started, because it started as a series, right? There were like 10 episodes and then it went into the movies. Mm-hmm. When you first got on and started doing Rita, did you envision like what it would become. This, like we talked a little before we start recording, right? It's a cult, basically. Yeah.
For no, I literally thought nuts. I was getting fired after the pilot. I didn't know why I got hired in the first place. I'm being honest.
You personally or the whole show?
No, me personally. Like I mean, Kristen and I have said this story so many times. I came to the read through and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I mean, like I'd never done anything like Rita. All I'd ever done was sci-fi and horror films. Like I was so confused by why I got hired. Also, I had tested for another series called Helix. It was like a sci-fi show. And so I was up for both at the same time. And then I ended up going with Signed Sealed and I was like, what am I doing here? Cause it was just so out of my wheelhouse. But I will tell you, cause I'm woo-woo like this, you know, a little while before that, I was sitting in my car in front of Starbucks in Maple Ridge, Canada, praying to whoever was listening. I really need something that challenges me and scares me. I just want a job where I'm scared to go to set every day because I wanted to grow. I was so desperate to do something different. And then I got Rita and was like, well, this is different. I don't know what's happening. But Martha, after the pilot, I watched it, she watched it, and I was like, oh, now that I've seen it, I know what I can do with Rita. Like, I really understand what I can do with her. And Martha and I had a meeting at Front Street office, and she goes, you know, you weren't who I had in mind when I first wrote this. Like, it wasn't, but now that I have you, I want to write for you, which had never happened to me as an actor. That does not happen for you, where the showrunner of Martha's magnitude also is like, I want to reframe this character around you, find your greatest strengths and push it that way. And so ironically, we both had the same idea of how we wanted to play Rita, and she just started writing it and it just started singing. I mean, literally at the read through when I walked in, Kristen was across the table from me and I saw her lean over to Scott Smith, our director, and go, is going on, you know, because she was looking at me and she didn't know I could see her, but I wanted to reach over and be like, I don't know, man, I don't know why I'm here. I'm 100% getting fired. You don't know, I don't know, you know, just because I think I did not look like the description of what Rita might have been in everybody's minds originally.
What was Rita supposed to be then?
I don't know. You can say it, Joel.
Joel, you were there from the beginning, right?
Yeah, I sold it to Hallmark. Martha had written this as a pilot, blind pilot when she was at CBS, and it was two men, actually. Shane was a man, and we changed it, and then we sold it to Hallmark together. And then when it was no longer a series, it was just perfect timing because they were just starting the Mystery Channel, and they loved the show, the people in charge, but it didn't do as well as some of the other ones out of the gate. And so I said, well, let's just do movies. I just, you know, like woke up thinking that and now we've done.
We are experiencing technical difficulties. Please enjoy the music.
Can you sing that out
loud? This may be an edit.
This might be an edit.
I don't know if we were allowed.
I was saying this is the thing that we released yesterday. You would not say. She just winked at me when she said we listen to our fans, wink.
Here's what I can say and you can keep in. Eric, you asked me about Signed Sealed. I will tell you that I am working out a ton and getting healthy because I am shooting something soon, and I'll leave it at that. Hopefully it's what you want me to be shooting.
You're getting in shape, you said?
Yeah, like
is that why you're doing these crazy get lost hikes?
Yes, because I have to be in front of the camera now, not behind the camera. When you're in front of the camera, you're like, oh, for the love of God, I need to get myself back. You know, I just the stamina you need when you're in front of the camera and behind the camera. Leading up to that, you want to be in the best shape of your life because you can't really work out while you're filming. It's just exhausting to do. So I want to be, you know, ready to go when that's happening.
So Joel, you said you sold it to Hallmark. Yeah. What was it that you saw in it that made you think, hey, this is a good show for Hallmark?
Well, Martha Williamson is a tremendous writer, so the script was exceptional. And then we just adjusted it to fit Hallmark. And, you know, and the message, the spirit of it is really so on brand for Hallmark, you know, and that's why it has lived for 10 years now, because, you know, it's about hope and it's nostalgic, and it's about, you know, everything happens when it's meant to, you know, so it has like a slightly spiritual underpinning. And it's been a glorious experience for me working with Martha through these 10 years. But in terms of the casting of Crystal, it just was supposed to be a real character-y looking person, you know, and we just didn't find the right person. And then, so really, Crystal would not have been, wasn't in the first five rounds of casting choices. So that's why she was like, okay, who else? Let's go against what we're thinking. And Martha knew the second she walked in, not the second she walked in, but the second she auditioned, she said, okay, finally, that's her. You know, and so even though that wasn't her in her mind, there's something so, you know, Martha looks for something very special in each person because every character is special. And Crystal brought that. And then her and Jeff Gustafson together are just a very funny comedic duo. And they had worked together previously. So it all came together and it's been quite a journey.
I find that fascinating because I guess Rita is, I can't envision anything else being that character, right? Aww. So I don't understand, like, to think that it was supposed to be something different than what you created. I can't even comprehend what that would be. So interesting.
I love Rita. I would say of all the things I've done in 30 years, Rita is the thing I love. She's the one I love the most. And I feel most connected to her.
It's also been a nice steady paycheck, which isn't the worst thing, right?
But also I just feel very connected to her. She's like, Rita comes from, she just sees everything in a good light. You know, she's always going to look for the best in people. Even when it's really tough to do that, she's going to try to find a way. And that's the thing about her that I feel most attached to. And she's still feisty, you know? So she's so much of me is in that character. But the biggest compliment is usually when people meet me, they go, oh my God, you're so different, or you're not what we expected when we meet Rita. And so that as an actor, that's a huge compliment for me because that means I'm doing my job and I'm embodying somebody completely, you know?
I can attest to that. Crystal, when she's got her LA Dodgers cap on and she's all serious.
Yeah, we have very, to talk, very different we have to talk about the Dodger hat, but that's another story. Do you have a crazy memory?
Me?
Yeah.
Of Rita?
No, just in general, because Rita has her like,
oh,
memory,
I see.
Right,
like
right?
No. Are you kidding me? I wish. But I will say when Mary Lou Henner came on, Mary Lou Henner does
all right.
And so when she came on, I was actually asking her a ton of questions because I was like, how do you do that? So I could play Rita that way. So she says she reads it like a paper. Like it comes up, she can look at it in front of her face and it's like she reads it as if it's, she's opening a newspaper from 1940, whatever. No, 1940. Mary Lou's not
right.
But like she can see it. So I started incorporating that into Rita of like seeing where, you know, the addresses or whatever. I just started using that as part of my character. But all the stuff with Rita just came up. Like I didn't plan any of that stuff. In fact, one of our directors came on and said, can you do the Rita thing? And I was like, I don't know what the Rita thing is. Like I didn't actively like write down, oh, Rita's going to do this with her glasses and Rita's going to run weird. I just ran weird. And they were like, hilarious. Rita is funny. I was like, oh, I guess I'm just weird. And the dancing, that part was really fun because Rita is, as you know, best dancer ever. And Zach Santiago is so fun to work with. The two of us were like, Martha was cry laughing behind the monitor during our dance scenes. So it was, you know, everybody was like killing it. Kevin was laughing out loud. We play a lot on that show. And the
did
four
you...
of us love each other and drive each other crazy. You know, we're a real family.
I'm so sorry, Crystal. I didn't mean to interrupt. I was going to say, did you see Eric's post on his Instagram of you dancing as Rita, the clip of you dancing?
No.
That was on your Instagram, right, Eric, from a couple weeks ago?
I don't think it actually was me.
Well, maybe? Now you're going to have to put it up. So
I thought it was
actually, I think you're right.
Yeah, it was from a few weeks ago. It was when like dancing to Friday, like kind of thing. And you're doing the hands when you're dancing.
It was a lot of crumping and a lot of whatever I was doing. It was so
yeah, a lot of this, fun. Whatever this is.
And also, you know, Rita has provided me the opportunity to do comedy, which to be honest, that's kind of mainly what I want to do. I prefer to do, my whole thing is rom-com. That's me inside out. And I love to be ridiculous. As ridiculous as I can be, please put me in that ring.
All right, we're going to go back just for a quick brief. Is shifting gears funny or is it mostly the rom?
No, okay. I think it's a rom-com. I think there's lots of funny moments in it. I always try to infuse funny. because that's my jam, you know. Humor is where I live. And Mike is pretty funny too. I mean, I'll give him the credit. So he was good.
Joel,
so if another signed, sealed, deliverer were to happen hypothetically here, you've got everyone married now, right? Where can the story actually go at this point?
Well, I'm going to tell you this crazy
thing. We're not going to answer that one.
Well, I can say this.
In general.
Here's what I can say about this crazy thing. Once you get married, here's the only problem I don't like with Disney movies in terms of like the princess gets married. Life doesn't end after marriage. In fact, I think it gets more complicated and sometimes often more funny, especially for a couple who has never lived together before they got married. That is an interesting room to explore, especially for two opposites that, you know, in real life would, you would think, how are they going to make this marriage work? If, you know, growth comes from being with your partner. That's where you really start growing. That's where you start opening up how to understand the other person. So there's so much story to be told with these two. And Martha at the helm, we're good.
Okay. See, yeah. See, she's much nicer than you, Joel. All right. So we talked about a little before, True Justice. We want to see more. I do not see, from a fan standpoint, how they cannot make more True Justices, because it was just, it had everything. That ensemble cast, I was really nervous. It's funny. I was talking with Andrea about this one because it was a movie where we talked to you and we did our podcast and everybody actually listened to it, from Nikki all the way down to Alex and Sarah. Like, they all listened to it, which scared the crap out of me. I was like, thank God we loved the movie, because, you know, and I talked to you, I'm like, if we had, you know, hated it, this would be terribly like uncomfortable, but we loved it. So that was good. But we know at the end of the day too, there's a business aspect that comes to the movies. How are the ratings for it? I haven't seen anything.
The ratings were excellent. I mean, we what's tricky is that the Hallmark audience is really loyal to the people they know.
Right.
And so our core cast was people they didn't know, even though Kat McNamara has 5 million followers, et cetera. But the idea of Nikki DeLoach, who wrote it, being in it, and then her asking Ben Ayers to do it with her, really enhanced a very high concept, interesting idea that people wanted to watch, but then it increased, I'm sure, because we also had Nikki and Ben, who are a beloved couple on Hallmark, and that they're a couple on this. So I think it did quite well.
That's perfect. Love to hear that the end of it went matches with the fan. And as Michael said, when I'd asked him the question, why would we like, he did say, in addition to all that has everything, he did say the power of the ensemble cast. And it really is an ensemble cast. Like no other mystery has that. Sorry, Science Seal Delivered. There is the debate of, is it a mystery? Is it not a mystery? So we're not going to have that conversation today, but that is, just like I say, that huge 5-person, you know, cast of it, which was absolutely fantastic. So love that.
I will say that it was predominantly Joel guiding the ship there too. I mean, that's an alchemical thing that's so hard to know whether or not you're on the right track or not. And I mean, there was a lot of cooks in the kitchen offering opinions on who's going to play off of Kat and Mark Ian. And we're so pleased with the three others that make up. But again, that's, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that wasn't Joel guiding the ship, because Joel was the one who was able to identify and say, no, this is what it should be. And he was right. I mean, it's.
Thanks, Mike. What was interesting though was that we put the group forward, and then Liz Yost, who's a tremendous executive, and Felicia Kennedy Flamer were our executives on True Justice. It was the same 5 that we wanted, but they moved it around a little bit.
That's what I heard, right?
Yeah.
Sabrina and Sarah flip flopped.
Yeah.
And they didn't know it. They didn't know it until they got there, which is absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
But okay. And then you guys also did Aurora Tea Garden, the new one, which I absolutely love. And I think Skylar, in my book, is the Aurora Tea Garden, more, even more so than the original one. So no, we have to have more of those. So that's awesome. But what else do you guys that you... Fun.
I was just going to say that one's fun, because to do a prequel after a show is so interesting. You know, like a sequel, you kind of know what it's supposed to be, but a prequel, right, like Young Sheldon did, but they... And so it's similar in the way that, like, we knew their backstories, but then we're also purposely, gradually, we hope for many, so that we're gradually getting to the present, the ones that Candace was so great in, you know. So it's been fun to define them earlier and have them knowing where they're supposed to get to, you know.
The funny thing is, some of the comments, though, some people who just don't understand what a prequel actually is kind of funny. But yeah, and then other people are like, wait, Skylar is taller than Candace. It's like, whatever. Yeah. Needs to say. Fans can be kind of weird.
If that's the biggest gripe, right? I'll take it. Right.
Another Easter egg of that is Jessica Harmon is the director of those. Yeah. And Jessica Harmon was who I shadowed and who we were talking about earlier, those shots.
Yeah.
Look for those real, you know, one-ers, but look for those beautiful one camera moving at the same time. She is like a master of those. My favorite thing to watch her do in design, the way she designs is amazing. So that's so much of Jess in there too.
Yeah, I would say that one was shot in a way that was, I think, very unlike any of the other mysteries. So fantastic. But okay, so we know that you guys have all sorts of secrets that you can't share, but we're sleuthers, so we love that. But what can you share as far as what's coming up? We know, Crystal, you said you're getting in shape, so that's fantastic. But what can you guys share that you know we can have to look forward to as Hallmark fans, whether it be the rom-com or in the mystery world?
Well, we're definitely doing more. I think it's safe to, you'll have to check to see if it's okay to tell all this stuff, but we are doing more of we're currently shooting more of the Aurora Tea Garden. We're doing 2 and 3.
Yeah, that's already been posted, so.
Okay, so you don't even want that information.
No, that's good.
Okay. And then the rest is really just hoping for. We also do Haunted Harmony Mysteries with Tamara Mowry Housley. And she in Ireland with a ghost is just a great one. So we're really hopeful for more of those. Family History Mysteries is another one that we do with Niall and Janelle. And Niall was just nominated for the Canadian Screen Award. We also did Never Too Late to Celebrate, which was nominated as Best Movie for the Canadian Screen Awards this week. So hopefully more Family History Mysteries. I'm developing something with Brennan that's a mystery. That's all I'll say. Brennan Elliott.
Ooh.
I was going to ask. Perfect. If we can tease anything about that. But
That's it.
That's all I can say.
Last year when we had him, he said he was starting to noodle some ideas. So, okay. So noodling is noodling farther. Love it.
Yes. Yes.
And we love the guy. So he definitely needs to be back in the mystery world.
Yeah, but front and center, it will be him as the lead.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. All right. Well, once again, this did not go as crazy as the Justice Warriors. And, you know, no one bagged on Drake. Celine Dion got a little bit of a diss to Whitney, but that's okay.
Yeah. Whitney will always be in my heart number one. And I love Celine Dion. I have been to a lot of her concerts. I'm not going to lie. But like Whitney is my that's the one. If you want my heart and you think I'm mad at you, just play her. Bring the speaker. We're good. We've swapped our beef.
It's true. I actually used that approach a couple times when I had to get out of the doghouse.
Yeah.
So. Wait. All right. We can't go now. Why were you? Give me one example why you get in the doghouse.
Oh, Eric, how much time do you have?
We have one.
Sure. If you need some filler, I'll tell you one quick story. So we were shooting a scene with Tyler. And the actor who played his father, whose name is escaping me right now.
Wait,
and
I feel Tyler, awful about this. Tyler.
Tyler, he's good-looking guy.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Hallmark movies.
Hallmark ones or something.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, this is when I needed to employ this tactic because I was definitely in the doghouse. So Tyler's collar, his suit jacket, was flipped up in the back. And we were over his shoulder shooting. And we were wide enough where we're getting a piece of him in the frame. So we're over him shooting the other actor for his coverage, talking to Tyler. And because Tyler's collar's flipped up in the back, it looked awful. And looking over to the script supervisor and the DP, and I'm like, why is... And Crystal wasn't at Video Village with us. She was upstairs with the actors because she's very hands-on and likes to get in there, you know, for performance. And I was like, what is she doing? Call cut. We're wasting time. We're wasting money. I'm never going to use this take because his collar's... So then I shouted out, can we just cut for a second and fix his collar and, you know, then we'll pick it up? I can honestly say I've only done that one other time in my career. The other director was like, oh yeah, good call. I didn't catch that. Not happy with that. Crystal came flying down the stairs to where our video village was and was like, how dare you? There's one person who can yell cut on this movie set. And that's me. And she said, I don't, I'm going to say it. You guys can decide collectively whether you want to keep this or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she said, if I was a man, would you have done that? And I shouted back at her and I said, I would have called cut sooner.
And I'll tell you, I actually started laughing because I was like, if I was a man, would you have done that? And he was like, I would have done it sooner. And I was like, oh. And then I started laughing. And then I think you need to understand.
He stormed off in opposite directions. And everyone was like, mom and dad are fighting.
You need to also understand me and Mike's relationship to know that, like, I've never felt so safe and supported in the role that I was in by anybody, you know? So we have a very open way of telling each other exactly what we think, and it's totally okay. It was actually, I love that story now. Like, I tell that story to people because I think it's so funny, because we really were like, you know, and then we just came back together and started laughing. And that's what we do when we're
through the power of Whitney.
We would fight, laugh, and then dance, you know?
A dance party outside we were able to make up. And yeah,
and then we would make up.
Short, so, like, so.
That takes me feeling very safe with someone. You know, like I never felt like I couldn't challenge my producer and that he couldn't give it right back, you know? And that finding that dynamic with somebody is difficult. It never felt like there was any stress. So I don't know if you want to keep that story, but I love that story.
Oh, no, that's actually, it's an awesome story because first of all, it's funny. But secondly, yeah. I think it like really shows, you know, when I was asking before, trying, were you nervous? You know, how did you go into your first movie? Clearly you got that director hat on and it was, I am here, I belong. And
yes,
this is my set. I don't care, Mike, you are, you know,
was
he right?
The question is,
was he right?
Well, I mean,
that's the thing that pisses me off. This is a sticking point. If you look, here's an Easter egg that you can look for in that scene. It's in a boardroom in the office of his father's business. The take that we ended up using for continuity had to be that one where his collar is up. So after all that, that actually made it into the cut. And it's only a quick second of that shot, but you will see that his suit collar has popped up and then it's corrected and back down the next time we cut back to him.
That so, made me so happy.
Just so you know, now you're getting a reprimand letter from Joel because he said you're not allowed to say the mistakes.
But I will, well, you can cut this part, but I will say that was like,
oh, I'm not cutting any of this.
That was my favorite revenge because I was like, you know what? That one thing you wanted me to sell, it's in the movie. Like you know, we just had such a good.
You called it.
And the reason
why. Don't make it in the cut. I'm like, it's not going to.
It's going to make it in the cut. I let them keep going because you don't know what the actor, you know, you might get something really interesting on the actor and yes, it wastes time, but also sometimes I can get coverage from other people that you don't know you're going to get in those moments. That's only because I'm another actor. So who cares about the color? Like, you know, but those were the things I was able to be exactly who I wanted to be and who I was with Mike. And that was like the best, you know, we have a great dynamic. So we can call each other on our BS is what I'm saying.
Yeah. And I do want to say really quickly that, you know, like, as far as I'm concerned, for my money, I learn from the best. There is nobody better at this than Joel. And that's who I learned from. Joel is my mentor and I'd follow this guy off a cliff like Thelma and Louise.
Well, now you're just trying to save the job after.
No. That's true. Yeah. But that Joel's theory, not theory, his style, the way that he produces is it's the director's movie. It's our job behind the scenes to facilitate the vision that the director wants, right? Mm-hmm. With Crystal, I will say that, you know, in a moment like that, she is incredibly, she's also fearless. Crystal is probably one of the bravest people I've ever met. So she was not only fearless, but she was completely collaborative too, because that is part of being fearless, to not be afraid to be like, I don't know, anybody got any ideas? You know what I mean? Like that glass-headed transparency, the way a surgeon, when a surgeon's operating on somebody, they'll say, I'm cutting into the abdomen, I can't get to this, blah, blah, blah. And then somebody else will say, have you tried this? Have you tried this? And when that decision is made by committee, the solution is often found a lot quicker and you'll get a better solution, you know, that ends up with a better, like a stronger product. And that was Crystal's MO to a T. When she gave that speech about the clock and how a clock has so many moving parts that you can't see, but the success is incumbent on all those parts working together. And I want to hear from you. She made good on that. Even in that moment, you know what I mean? Where we butt heads for a second, she's she's at least open to it, which you don't get all the time.
So. Yeah, of course. Also, it was you. And he's smart. He's good at his job. So, like, it feels good when I have an equal counterpart going toe-to-toe with me. I'm happy to go toe-to-toe with anybody, and I will make my case, but I'm always open to interesting. And from people that I respect, who are smart, which I hate admitting while he's here.
Could you keep that part, Eric? Could you say that again? Just to...
But we did this with each other all day, every day. You know, we were just like razzing each other all day. It was just very comfortable. And I had no problem asking for things, and he had no problem saying no, which I found very annoying. So towards the end, he was like, no. I was like, fine. You know, it was just a good relationship.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, like I say, we were saying goodbye, but that was like the best 15 minutes. So I obviously have to keep it. So I absolutely love it. Okay. I guess the one that I will end on this one. So do you have, Crystal, like a, you know, we talked about from an acting standpoint, what's up? From a directing standpoint, is there anything like, okay, hey, you did a great job, we are going to use you again. Like, have you got any confirmation that more directing is coming your way?
You know, I don't have a specific job sitting in the can right now because I have another job that I have to go do where I'm in front of the camera. That being said, I am shooting something soon that's more of a pitch for a totally other thing. So I can tell you right now, there'll be more directing jobs coming. I'm not worried about it. And even if they weren't coming, I'm going to make them. So like I know that what's right for me will come to me. Working with Muse was like, it just made total sense. So I'm sure that's coming again.
Do you think you're going to be like Mike, who, you know, was acting and then decided he loved the producing and pretty much produces now? Do you think directing maybe?
You know, I honestly do all three. I write too. So like I look at myself and what I aim to be are people like Issa Rae and Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Mindy Kaling and women that are like show running their own shows, directing their on episodes and writing your own stuff and still acting. So I don't always have to be the star of the show. In fact, sometimes I'd rather be the weird sidekick because it's funnier. But I will be doing all three all the time. And I'm going to drag Mike back into it too. I'll give him these cameos just so he can pop in the frame and then pop back. Well, just me yelling.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Crystal's a much better actor than I ever was. So the transition was a little bit easier for me.
We'll see.
Well, I will say that was a great end for like basically woman, like I say, International Women's Day, of just doing it all. And I think this, you just motivated, I think, an inspiration to, you know, a generation of young women just who are, you know, listen to this, I hope, because it is an absolutely fascinating story. And I'm looking forward to watching it. And I wish you all the success. And Muse guys, quit with the rom-coms and just focus on the mysteries. That's all I have to say. Okay. More mysteries.
You got it, buddy.
Thank you all for being on here. So Shifting Gears is coming out. When can we actually look forward to seeing this magnificent movie?
Thank you. March 23rd on the Hallmark Channel, 8/7 Central. I'm calling. I am like literally blowing the horn for the Erpers and the Postables and the Heinies. You guys, as a force together, like we are fully unstoppable. Also, I'm trying to figure out the acronym. So can you guys figure that out so I can call you the host Erpers or whatever? We got to think of a whole new name for all of us to join together and show them what we got. Yeah.
The Hardys too. We want the Hardys.
Oh, the Hardys too. Please come over. And I was just talking to my sweet friend, Viv Leacock, who about the Hardys, and he's going to tune in and talk to some of those people too, to come on board. So sending my love to all of you guys. Thank you for being so supportive. We literally could not do this without the fans. They are my favorite people. And I mean that genuinely. And I hope I get to meet more of you soon down the line.
All right. Fantastic. Can't wait.
Thank you, Eric.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, Eric.